This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. The land of love, the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown.
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 And it is Rewind to SmackDown. John Pollock and Wei Ting going through another afternoon edition of SmackDown, another three-hour version of SmackDown from the Wembley Arena in London, England.
As they all will be for the next little while.
Yes, until they go to Canada for SmackDown next week. So there's a little interruption there, but then it's to Saudi Arabia for the Rumble weekend. So yeah, a couple more afternoon shows. We got Northern Ireland on Monday for Raw. So
yeah,
lots of international dates coming up. But tonight takes us to London, England. Last number from WrestleTix was 10,274. And they're starting off the show in grand fashion with a bagpipe introduction for Drew McIntyre, who comes out. Guy's looking like $1 million here. What an incredible entrance into Wembley Arena for Drew McIntyre. And the crowd is singing, "Oh, Drew McIntyre," and they were censoring this.
This is really strange. Yeah.
Like, I was listening to this. I'm like, there is nothing that I would even confuse any of these words with. It was three words. "Oh, Drew McIntyre." And they continually censored this over and over. And somebody had a very extreme trigger finger on the censoring here. This was a bizarre one of like, it's not smooth, but I understand they do not want certain words from the crowd, but this one was puzzling.
I'm trying to think like what they could have thought this crowd was saying. That was like, I don't know, that sounded like, oh, like what could possibly be so bad?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I tried.
I think the censors, whoever censored this at Netflix, were probably just really sick of this White Stripes chant. Like, we
well,
can't
then
have this
more
anymore.
Power
we're
to
done.
Them. Okay. If they were trying to take a stand, then understood. Mm-hmm. Drew says, "I prayed for this and it happened." And the crowd cheers. He said, "I had a rough few years, or the UK has had a rough few years, but I can bring us all together. The first British champion. And over the past week, I've gotten all the messages, heard all of your cheers. And all I can say is, screw you." And this guy was so over as a babyface when he came out here. I understood that they had to do this turn here, but he really did have this Bret Hart feel to him of, here he is, the guy that, first of all, wanted the title match in Europe. He wasn't going to do it in the U.S. It was kind of interesting. Like, would they play with this? But they wanted to keep this a more streamlined presentation of Drew McIntyre. But my God, did this crowd just love Drew McIntyre.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And, like, I feel his appearances prior, like in between last week's SmackDown to now, like doing the house show and everything, was all like 100% babyface. I mean, he cut this like very heartfelt promo. I believe it was in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Where like he, you know, was talking about his dad and like everything, and just like he kind of really played it up. Right. So, and plus the bagpipe entrance and everything, really making it
was awesome.
Like,
it was really awesome. This entrance,
I think they really were setting up like a babyface reaction to start before you get the turn here. And even the turn was more of one of those, like, you know, oh, Drew, you know, like it's like kind of one of those, he's our jackass types of reactions, which I mean, the crowd seemed to respect on just a professional wrestling performance level.
He said he's not doing just some bad guy bit. He asks, "Where were all of you when I got fired? There was no uprising when I was screwed by the Bloodline. You cheered CM Punk. You yeeted. The only person who believed in me that I want to thank is myself." And he refers to the former champion, Cody Rhodes. They start to sing for Cody, and he added a clause to the contract, and nobody reads the contracts anymore. Stupid Cody. No rematch. And therefore, Cody has to go to the back of the line, and the vanilla QB1 era is over.
The vanilla QB1. All right. Okay.
So Randy Orton interrupts him, comes down. He says that, Drew, you were about to kick my head in last year, but you hesitated. I won't hesitate to do the same. Jacob Fatu is out next, and he chases after Drew through the crowd after they brawl on the floor. And then, in a throwback to when he cashed in on the man, Miz appears from behind Randy Orton, skull-crushing finale, and that would take us into our first of four qualifiers setting up the Saturday night's main event match. So getting everybody out here, and more to come with Jacob Fatu and Cody Rhodes later in the show.
Yeah, a few programs being set up here. I mean, Orton seems like he might be an imminent challenger for Drew. Of course, you have Fatu in there as well. So it's all leading, well, probably taking us through from Rumble season and maybe even beyond.
This elusive Cody-Randy match that has been like discussed for years. I wonder if we're ever going to get to this one.
They did one, but not like, you know, with both of them on
not outside. With like a defined heel in the program. Like there was the tease a few weeks ago, but you know, as has come out, like it seems like these plans all kind of came together last week. Like this was a whole reshuffle.
Could be this year.
Orton and Miz is the first qualifier. And I mean, there are performers that you can just close your eyes and you can envision exactly how a match goes, and that is the case for Randy Orton. You just know exactly what is coming. Come back with the clotheslines, power slam, draping DDT. Crowd loves this. He's dumped on the desk, or dumps Miz on the desk twice. And then we get a series of counters. Orton kicks out of a skull-crushing finale, and then it ends with each going for their finisher. They are blocked, and Miz runs into an RKO with Randy winning in 4 minutes, 38 seconds to qualify.
Yeah, a very typical match, really, from the both of them. I mean, I feel like, you know, you've probably seen this match, like, for, I don't know, 15 years now, the Randy Orton versus The Miz, some incarnation of
this
it.
This is the Randy Orton years. House show night off special. I mean, gets a great reaction, and he just plays the hits and did it in 4.5 minutes.
And it's perfectly fine. But, like, maybe if you compared this match today from the same iteration of it 15 years ago, I would venture to guess maybe like it's better now because of just the standard of wrestling versus maybe what it was back then with like long chin locks and shit like that. I hope that would be an interesting experiment. Compare Randy Orton versus The Miz from like, you know, 2011 versus like, you know, 2026. Like here, I felt like there was some effort to like, you know, like work up to the speed of like modern professional wrestling. But overall, it was ultimately, for us, very forgettable. But for the people live, I mean, they wanted to see an RKO. They got the RKO. They reacted very well for it.
How quickly would you sign up for a Randy Orton watch-along of Darby Allin and Pac from Wednesday night?
I would be very interested in that. I think he'd have a great time watching it, as long as he's not the one taking the bump.
Yeah, I mean, he'd probably have a great time. Yeah. Drew's backstage, escaping Jacob Fatu's wrath when he runs into Ilya Dragunov, who is going to be one step closer to the title after tonight. Drew doesn't care. He said, I didn't knock out Jacob Fatu's teeth, but I will knock out yours. So it's still at large, the attacker for Jacob Fatu, that we could have weeks of a whodunit in all of this.
Yeah.
The Wyatt Six video, Uncle Howdy reacts to the lantern being stolen last week and said that all the MFTs inherited was the weight of what it really means. It was never a weapon. We carried it in the dark, so the dark didn't carry us. And it doesn't belong in your hands. It will come back to us like a moth to a flame. And we won't rest until it's home. This is TNA.
Similar vibe, right? To all of those. Yeah. I do feel like having, you know, like with Drew stealing Punk's bracelet, I think adding a simple MacGuffin to this MFT's Wyatt story adds a lot of very easy to understand motivation for really the program itself. I mean, you know what the story is now. The Wyatts want to get their lantern back because of what it represents between Bray and also the Fireflies. And the MFTs are doing
it's basically an urn for Bray Wyatt,
yeah.
But they're not going to say Bray Wyatt directly.
Yeah, sure. I mean, what they're saying is it represents the Fireflies that Bray once controlled, and now they've taken ownership of it, right? And the MFTs are doing it because they want the tag team championships. It's now a story we can actually define and say this is why they're fighting, which I was having a lot of trouble before that. I think the Wyatts at times are an act that tries. I mean, this was a problem with Bray, like through his promos, where they try to be too high concept in, you know, like execution and promo, certainly. But I think supplementing it with these sort of like simple storytelling devices, like you stole my shit, now I want it back, is exactly the type of thing that it needs. You know, it worked for The Undertaker anytime his urn was stolen, like, you know, or turned into like commas, chains. That's just easy to understand. You could be any age, no matter what language you speak, you could understand what that's about. So I think the Wyatts have needed something like this in quite some time.
Did you get a video message like this after WrestleMania 30 from the general manager of the Louisiana Superdome for removing a lantern?
Yeah, no, I am still in control of the Fireflies. Yes.
Your favorite best friends, Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss, reunited this week after an illness kept Charlotte away last week. Alexa tells her, last week sucked. She lost to Julia and was attacked by Nia Jax and asked Charlotte if she was really sick. And we got our favorite, one of our many WWE-isms. She said, I had a title opportunity last week. Charlotte says, do you know how many title opportunities I've missed out on? It's always title opportunity. And Bliss asks if they each have each other's back. Charlotte apologizes for being sick, and Nia and Lash walk in to try and stir the shit with Charlotte, stating that Bliss is trying to make her feel guilty, and Charlotte is not hearing any of this. And the heart was formed at the end of this discussion.
So it could be leading a turn. It could not be leading to anything. But at the very least, with a team like this, I mean, you always want to be teasing some form of breakup, some form of tension, because this frenemies thing they were doing, like, resulted in like attempts to be cute that I thought were mostly just really bad promo segments.
Have you ever walked into a scene and butt scooted your friend?
I've not done that. No, I don't think so. But like, they've really not been interesting for the entire year since they formed. So I'm happy to see that this is even becoming a little bit more interesting.
Is there a chance one eliminates the other in the Rumble and tries to play it off as an accident?
Totally.
Like maybe now is the time to, like, these
play
two
the hits,
kind of,
man. Dude, yeah. Give me all of that stuff. You know,
break
all the
heart.
Have done.
That's what this one's leading to.
Break the heart. Yeah. Just smash her face through a barbershop window.
Michael Venom Page was showing, taking in the show. And Julia and Kiana James against Bliss and Charlotte. Corey Graves says that Kiana has flown under the radar in WWE. She has all the tools to be a major player. We'll okay. Wait and see.
They see something that I don't think we've seen yet on television, because I don't think she's really shown that much.
So it turns out Charlotte Flair, during her illness, I guess she was flipping around, seeing what was on television. Maybe she ordered a pay-per-view. Maybe she tuned into TBS last week, and she came to Alexa and decided to do a waltz together as they used it into offense here. So this was very much out of the Tony Storm Orange Cassidy playbook.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, I'm sure they would just say it was coincidental. But
of course. There's the advantage on Bliss, and Flair comes in, hits her exaggerated chops, got totally lost on this reverse neckbreaker that Corey, who usually is just very honest when a spot is blowing, is like, beautiful neckbreaker. I was like, I don't know what that was. They have strikes between Julia and Flair, and then Kiana runs off the ropes and gets caught with Sister Abigail as Bliss pins her in 8:27. Nia and Lash come out attacking Julia, and then they go after Bliss and Flair, and Julia is trying to get into Nia's face, and it's Kiana holding her back.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're building to like simultaneous programs here with Lash and Nia versus Alexa and Charlotte in some sort of tag team match, and then maybe at the same time Julia versus Nia Jax as a US title challenger, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe Kiana's a heel, Julia's a babyface, they team together. Julia might as well just retire this US title. Let's just be going for the tag belts.
Yeah, well, something needs to happen drastically. I mean, this is their second chance with these, you know, like the US championship with Julia, and I guess what is this now? 2 weeks in? I haven't really seen a whole lot of difference, you know. It's really still the same act.
Not a whole lot has changed, but Kiana has all the tools to be a major player. We will see.
We'll show them. Like, even in terms of promo, I don't think she's been that interesting.
They don't let her talk.
Yeah, yeah. It's still, you know, it hasn't really been the rebrand that I feel like this needed, you know, so.
Solo responds to Bo Dallas. He can see the millions of Fireflies across the world, and they are now in his possession. He says they need to put the belts on the line to get this lantern back, and they will take really good care of it. And he will be with me when I beat Damian Priest and then become undisputed WWE champion, none of which happened.
No, no. Well, he still has the lantern.
Yeah, but what good was it? Didn't help him tonight, did it?
Yeah, no. Mm-hmm.
Throughout the month of January, you have the chance to lock in your subscription at the Post Wrestling Cafe for all of 2026 before the price increase takes effect February the 1st. Simply sign up before February 1st and you will lock in that price all year long. If that's not enough, this month we have the annual Best and Worst of Show as we get together with the Poison Rana crew to look back at 2025. We're also doing live watch-alongs of the Royal Rumbles from 1990 and 1995 with Brandon from New Jersey, a retrospective on the Tanahashi-Okada rivalry, plus reaction to Wrestle Kingdom 20, a review of TNA's debut on AMC, and much more, including TNA Genesis, UFC 324. It's all found at postwrestlingcafe.com. Cody Rhodes comes out. Very mixed reaction for Cody. And he acknowledges it and says that, well, it was all becoming very episodic. Very episodic. Couldn't have come up with a better word myself. And he goes over his entrance and how I would come out. I'd punch three times to the ground. We'd all say, whoa. And then I'd ask you, what do you want to talk about? Well, he explains, he breaks down why he asked that question to the fans, because I didn't just want to be the company's champion. I wanted to be your champion. This was not enamoring him with this audience.
And they blew that.
I saw you as teammates, and he wonders, maybe I became complacent, or was Drew just that good? And says, what do Hulk Hogan, Shawn Michaels, and Steve Austin have in common? They all won back-to-back Rumbles, as did Cody, but only one of them won three Rumbles. But my superpower is believing in myself, and mentions coming to London to wrestle for What Culture Pro Wrestling. He had that bullet in the chamber, and then to get the rest of the crowd. And London is a city that deserves WrestleMania. Yes! Yes, Cody, we love you! You're the best! It's like, this was the most pandering of all remarks you could make. Like, just forced into this promo. And declares himself for the Royal Rumble and addresses Jacob Fatu, a man he met in all pro wrestling in Northern California, and I know Jacob knows what a receipt means, and the biggest receipt that Cody has ever written is coming for Jacob Fatu, because I'm gonna beat the brakes off your ass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what a Cody promo.
I actually thought it was a very interesting Cody promo, and one that I felt he handled really well. I mean, number one, I feel like he was almost expecting, if not even encouraging a little, the heel reaction here coming out. And there was certainly maybe you could say more than a sprout of the heel reaction. But I thought he even amplified it that much more through his facial reactions, certainly by acknowledging it. And then by even using his words to comment on it as well. So I do wonder if all of this is done to explicitly foreshadow the heel turn eventually. And I certainly hope he continues to play with this gray area. I mean, kind of taking up where Cena has kind of left off, right? Where Cody at this stage in his career, these negative reactions as the ace of the company aren't necessarily a bad thing. There's something that can make him a lot more interesting and will add a different dimension to the character if he can continue to flirt with that heel turn, which I think it will eventually come. But I hope that he plays with expectations and makes us really wait for it. So that was the first interesting thing about the promo. Second thing was, I think, how he was able to turn this crowd come back to, like, you know, loving him by the end. And I mean, yes, maybe a little bit cheap, you know, mentioning what culture, mentioning WrestleMania, which was like more than just a, you know, ammunition. Like, that was like a flamethrower, and this crowd just like he also mentioned, like, what is this,
what about poor New Orleans? Where are they?
Oh, he's not
they're, anymore. They're getting sacrificed in March.
He also mentioned getting a Blue Peter badge from the BBC. So that was kind of lost. That didn't receive as big of a reaction as the WrestleMania one. But I thought, like, it showed a lot of ability to manipulate the crowd well in, you know, being able to use...
Promise them stuff. You don't have to tell them when... I think you deserve a WrestleMania. Like, that, he could say that in Montreal next week.
Yeah, but it wasn't just, like, the line. It was, like, also his acknowledgement of why the crowd might, at this point, dislike him. You know, by suggesting that the things I've been saying have been a bit routine. Episodic was the word that he used. But he admits that he hasn't been the most exciting person to watch in these sort of promo segments because he's been doing the same thing so much. And he even, like, put over Drew McIntyre, suggesting that he might actually be that good. So I think it shows a level of self-awareness that, like, diffuses a crowd from, like, you know, furthering negative reaction. And then he gets into this excellently spirited declaration for the Royal Rumble, where he says, despite being a two-time winner, he brings us sort of an angle that positions himself as the underdog by claiming that nobody has ever three-peated before, and he wants to be the first. So even though he's coming in as the defending Rumble champion, he is a bit of an underdog against the statistic of being a three-time winner. So I thought that was really well done. And then tying it all back by saying, what do you want to talk about, and breaking into that Jacob Fatu promo at the end, I actually felt like it was a really, really well done Cody promo.
Kathy Kelly interviewed Matt Cardona. He said it was a shame Cody lost. He wanted to face his buddy. But he also goes way back with Drew McIntyre because he was Drew McIntyre's first opponent in WWE. Czech cage match. So Cardona against Trick Williams. And this one went 8 minutes, 51 seconds. Trick dominated throughout the break. And Cardona hit a reboot. And then he used the zigzag. And he flipped Cardona into the ring, hits him with a trick kick for two, and then a rock bottom that they describe as Cardona countering. And I rewound this. It's like, I don't know what he did to counter this, but that's what they called it. There's a Rough Rider that gets stopped, and Trick hits a pounce and the trick shot and beats Cardona pretty clean here. I wouldn't say the match really got to any kind of strong level.
It was just fine.
Like that. It was a match. And
it's a modern WWE heavyweight style of match. Like, not very risky, ultimately not very memorable. Nothing particularly impressive about either in ring.
Not risky, not memorable. Yeah, that describes it very
well.
That's
not why these guys have jobs, though, right? Like, they might be of a certain standard, fine. But, like, Trick's thing is more his charisma. It's more his promo, which he gets a lot of time showcasing. And I guess Cardona's is what, like, some form of, like, I don't know, like,
he's not finished.
as a veteran.
Yep, he's back.
Nostalgia, maybe.
It doesn't really feel like he's that, like, strong of a nostalgic figure. I mean, he's got a story, like, he's fought his way back to WWE. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like, it's going to take some kind of shift for Matt Cardona character wise, something that gives him some kind of connection.
It's gonna take a heel turn
this version
and then,
of WWE. And then, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe that's ultimately where he, like, you do the return deal, you get, like, the courtesy reactions and stuff, and maybe in a couple months you could do the turn, you could pair with Chelsea. There's stuff you could do with him, but, like, I don't know. He's back, and it already feels like he's another guy on the roster.
He's not. Nobody wants to see Zack Ryder, like, Internet Wrestling Champion anymore. Like, he's not that anymore. He cut that off by killing the name, right? The appeal of Matt Cardona is being, like, this sort of shit disturber that we've seen in GCW, being this troll, essentially. Now, how do you transfer that character to the WWE? Like, when you're, like, you can't really troll the WWE audience by being a WWE wrestler like you can, you know, in GCW. So what sort of new angle can you find on that?
Maybe he goes against our corporate governance. Maybe he starts, he buys stock in the company, and he becomes an aggressive shareholder.
That would be quite the interesting.
Maybe he refuses to go to Saudi Arabia for the Royal Rumble.
Okay. That would be a,
him and Kit Wilson could be the extreme left. That could be their characters.
I love it. Love it.
Speaking of, out comes Kit to his theme and walks by Trick and Cardona, attacks Cardona, running him into the steps, calling him toxic. Total babyface reaction for Kit Wilson. And
something, I mean, what had happened? It's amazing how overnight, like, so by the way, this was my worst character of 2020.
He's my best of 2026.
Yeah, and he might be mine too. Like, it's amazing how overnight, literally, like, he went from being so awful in those backstage segments to now simply having this song. Like, it's mainly achieved by the song, you know, which is just like
the theme's the turning point. Like, yeah. It's just such a great song. It fits him so well. And I mean, it was not an accident that they made sure that they had, like, this was all about this guy's entrance. Like, all that we're going to talk about after, this guy is the entrance and the crowd loved it.
And wearing the pearl necklace, like, suddenly because of the song, I like everything else about him.
It's this halo effect he receives from his music. We go backstage. Kelly's with Damian Priest, and he has a lot of history with Drew McIntyre. Everyone's got history with Drew McIntyre. And he says that this is the city where he won Money in the Bank, and he will do anything to get a shot at Drew's title. So we go back. Wilson's in the ring. He knows, they know he's right, and he's the solution to the problem. They need leadership, and it's him. And they chant his name when Jacob Fatu appears from behind, super kicks Kit Wilson, and man, did this crowd boo Jacob Fatu. I mean, this guy was like Dixie Carter level heel to this audience. He destroys Kit Wilson. Like, part of me wondered if they thought this was going to be like treated like Jacob Fatu would be the badass babyface here, because I don't know 100%. I don't know how you could sketch this scenario and not think that there was going to be a very pro Kit Wilson reaction to all of this.
Yeah, I know. In
England, you're giving him the theme, like, you're understanding what the online focus has been on this guy, and you put him in this role. It just sucked for Fatu to be in this spot, because I think they all thought that, oh, this is going to be a great, like, this is our stone cold character coming to take out the whiny Kit Wilson. And this crowd, they were all into Kit Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't really tell you maybe what the thought is in the construction of it, other than just the idea that, hey, like, ultimately Wilson is, like, you know, a cowardly heel type of character, and you need a babyface to oppose him. And really, like, take any babyface, you know, from their roster who would sort of fit the Jacob Fatu role here. They would have been booed, I think, similarly, other than, like, maybe Cody certainly would have been food. Trying to think who would have been able to survive this. Maybe you just shouldn't have done this period, the segment.
Well, I mean, Fatu murdered him, hit the springboard moonsault, and he calls out Cody, who runs out, and they have a huge pull-apart brawl with Nick Aldis out there with security. They did have a very compelling brawl here, and this led to the announcement that it will be Cody and Jacob Fatu at Saturday night's main event in Montreal, which... that'll be an interesting crowd reaction next week for this match and how this one goes in front of the crowd. It's a fresh matchup. It's Cody out of the title picture, but it's against a guy that the audience is really into. So that's our third match announcement for next weekend.
Yeah, this match in Montreal, like, we're talking about, you know, Cody Rhodes in 2026, who, again, I felt tonight was very much encouraging the heel reaction against, like, you know, up until his injury, a very beloved babyface, Jacob Fatu. I think, like, Fatu's kind of lost some of that momentum, you know, since his absence. You know, he's kind of been out of sight, out of mind, and he doesn't necessarily feel as hot coming back as he did before he left.
Could he win this match? Like, just, yeah, like, he needs the win, and Cody's sort of in this spiral after the title loss, and... like, he's going to be one of the big players in the Rumble, like, whether he wins it or not. Like, Cody can afford to lose this match, because you figure, like, this is the title picture. It's Drew, Cody, and Jacob Fatu for the time being.
Yeah. I think Fatu, I certainly don't think Fatu gets pinned. You know, I think ultimately they're still protecting him. And does he?
I don't see, it would be hard to see them. I mean, certainly it's not really either. It'll should be losing at this point, but. the upset is not out of the question either.
It'll be finished on a technicality. I mean, in either case, it won't be clean. It'll require, like, I don't know, like, who is Cody feuding with other than Fatu? I don't know.
Just Drew.
Whatever. Like, one of these guys will, yeah, Drew will probably get involved somehow, leading to something in
Kit Wilson.
Yeah, that's possible too. I think Montreal would love him too.
Solo Sikoa and Damian Priest. Fatu does the full Uncle Howdy Wyatt's entrance with the lantern. Graves says it feels dirty watching this. It's blasphemous what he is doing, and refers to it as a family heirloom. So Sikoa is in control, and Priest comes back, flatliner. Tala Tonga crotches him and gets ejected for his efforts. Sikoa then is stopped on top for a razor's edge, kicks out. And then as Priest goes for the South of Heaven, Tama distracts the referee, allowing Tonga Loa to distract Priest. And Priest ducks the Samoan spike, but is hit with a spinning solo and a splash off the top when the lights go out. And the Wyatts are standing on the desk behind the MFTs, and Graves yells, "The Wyatts are here, and they want their lantern back." And Sikoa grabs the lantern and knocks down Uncle Howdy, staggers into the ring, right into South of Heaven, and gets pinned in 10 minutes and 12 seconds. This lantern, just the demise of his precious.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, I guess, to me, I feel like it's more important. I buy the lantern more than I do the Dusty Rhodes photograph with Cody printed out from WWE.com archives.
This guy's going to have a hell of a museum exhibit by the end. Like, if he can proclaim the Ulafala, the lantern, I mean, he's not out for titles. He's out for artifacts.
He's a collectibles, enthusiast. Yeah,
he's going for maybe the crown next. I mean, these are the things he's going to pick up along the way.
Yeah, this Uncle Howdy. It was very much a House of Torture match, and that's to say I didn't think the match was very good. Like, the Wyatts received a good reaction for the lights out thing, and they give you a nice little tug of war over the lantern in the end.
Yeah, Uncle Howdy took the lantern, laughs inside of the ring when Tala Tonga returns, boots him, and hands the lantern back to Solo Sikoa. So this will ride out through Mania, the possession of the lantern story.
Good.
Zayn meets with Drew McIntyre, and Drew reminds him of his prediction last week that he thought Cody would end up winning. But Zayn says he's happy Drew won because he's going to beat Ilya tonight, win in his hometown of Montreal, and then challenge Drew at the Royal Rumble, when Drew reminds us of their head-to-head record. Now, it's been mentioned that Zayn has never beaten Drew, but Drew reminds us, "I've beaten you 11 times. 11 times.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah.
12th time might be the charm.
And it's 11. Not even, like, in my mind, I don't even think the disparity between their statuses on the roster has been that out of line, right? Like, maybe a lot of these matches took place when, like, Sami Zayn was, like, the documentary heel, like, that sort of Sami Zayn versus, like, Drew McIntyre at the time, who was, you know, like more of the ace of the company, maybe. But, yeah, 11 times is pretty staggering.
I love that stat. Carmelo Hayes comes out, and the U.S. Open challenge is answered by Mr. Visa himself. It's Leon Slater, who is coming here to charge this crowd up. And this guy was such a star in this match. Like, the mannerisms that he was doing, like, this guy felt like this veteran that was just had this audience. He commanded the presence of this audience. And this is one of the biggest crowds this guy is ever performing in front of here. And I just thought he was great in this match. Hayes is selling the leg all throughout the match. Hayes delivers this vertical suplex into a cutter, but the first 48 gets stopped. And there's a small package by Hayes, kick out from that. And then a leaping leg drop onto the edge is delivered by Slater. They do the fish out of water covers back and forth. And then a Rana that spikes Hayes on his head. And Slater does his big dive over the corner post that the crowd went wild for. Small trivia note. This was the first match my daughter ever watched. She came in and just was transfixed watching this. Watched this for several minutes, and her question at the end was, "Why don't they wear shorts?" And I couldn't answer that because I said, you know what? Some do wear shorts, and it's probably a lot hotter with tights than shorts. And then she left. And Slater missed the Swanton 450, the first 48 hits for a two count, and the knee is still affecting Hayes, but a superplex attempt is turned in midair into a cutter by Hayes for the very impressive win, 11 minutes and 43 seconds. I thought this got the AMC era off to an awesome start. I love this. Like this defined like what you can expect on Thursday nights.
No, yeah, I'll be tuning into Genesis this weekend. Excellent match here, really. Like Slater coming out of like the whole NXT, you know, TNA experiment. I would have thought Slater might have been going to NXT rather than, you know, like Javon Evans will go to the main roster. Slater goes to NXT. But now I think Slater is more than ready for the main roster after like this.
This guy has so many intangibles. Like he's just shows a level of poise in it. Like that AJ save that we've continually gone over. Like it just tells you a lot about a guy who is, folks, 21.
Oh, it's amazing.
The guy has like the command of like a 20-year veteran.
I think there's a lot. I mean, I think you could say similarly about Javon, but like, I think there's so much money in like telling their story coming up together as 21-year-olds who are just absolutely amazing right now. Both of them are.
Like, these should be generational rivals. Yeah. That should be this story that should be told over years to come.
Yeah. But like Slater, I mean, this whole conversation over like this TNA, you can say debacle from Thursday has really improved Leon Slater's stock. You know, like whatever the reason why he wasn't around, visa issues, whatever, his absence was completely felt and made a huge difference in the presentation of that product. And so it just kind of made him feel like that much of a bigger deal. And to kind of like cap off the week with this match on a massive stage in his home country against Carmelo Hayes, I thought was just, I mean, this was, it ended up being an incredible week for Leon Slater, and he only like worked this one match. So you see this and you totally feel like he's ready to completely leapfrog NXT. And I mean, stole the show here with Carmelo Hayes, who continues to be an excellent US champion.
What if these two redid this match after everyone left the arena and they sent that to air on Genesis tomorrow night?
You mean a Texas death match with Nick Nemeth as a special ref?
Yes. Yeah, an empty arena death match.
Hello, Braden Harrington here from Up Next. You can catch us live every Tuesday here at Post Wrestling as we cover NXT. But if you search Poison Rana in your YouTube or podcast app or social media of choice, you can check out all the other wrestling content that we create, podcasts, and so much more. Visit PoisonRana.ca and keep it lit.
Nakamura is watching this match backstage. Hell of a trip to go watch this. And he's approached by Tama Tonga, who says, "You had your chance at the U.S. title and you blew it. And once the MFTs get the tag belts, I'm coming for the U.S. title." So Tama has been watching this U.S. title from afar for months. He's ready. He's putting his plan into action in the coming months. Nakamura just responded in Japanese. Not a clue what he said, but he says it in a cool way. And Tama took all of this in, and that was it.
Do we know how like fluent Tama actually is?
We're assuming he got everything here. Like Nakamura might have said, "You raise many valid points. I will step aside. And you know what? I didn't get to wrestle my friend in Japan, and I don't get to wrestle for the U.S. champion either. So you know what? I'm just going to wait my turn. You go get it, Tama."
My assumption is that Tama was listening in on all this, and like he was just very slowly just standing there trying to decipher what exactly Nakamura said. You know, he's trying to maybe punch it into Google Translate or something.
Well, that's it's pushing the audience to learn Japanese. That's going to be our next goal to tackle. Oh my God, this Axiom backstage stuff is just the worst. For those that missed our best and worst of show, worst on the mic was presented by Waiting to the entire SmackDown Tag Division, and We got the turtleneck too here in Axiom, both in masks, taking out Gargano. They still want this fucking mask back, which is dangled in front of them. They just don't have the gumption to just rip it out of Candace's hands. They've got to like win this in some valiant way. They've got more than enough masks to spare, but this precious one that Gargano took is all of their focus. Next week, we're going to get Nathan Frazier against Johnny Gargano. So at least a match between these two on a 3-hour SmackDown. But God, are these suck. These are just the worst.
Terrible. When it comes to like these sort of MacGuffin storylines, I think now I would rank. This is not a great race, okay, but like the lanterns with the MFTs, and then Cody's printed WWE.com printout with Dusty Rhodes.
Okay,
and at the very bottom is Axiom's mask. I mean, not like this whole tag team division is kind of played for jokes and comedy anyway, and really bad comedy at that. So all of these skits are just like met with like almost like a bit of a Three Stooges vibe, where like I think we're supposed to laugh at them, but I never really feel all that much out of them. But at least the wrestling will be good.
Obafemi video. I'm thinking they're just going to announce he's in the Rumble. That'll be the culmination of these videos.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Chelsea Green, Jordan Grace. Jade Cargill is at ringside, and Grace kind of just steamrolled her here. Elba Fire got in a cheap shot from the floor, and then Grace just hooks the arms, is ramming Green into the corner, hits her with some short arm clotheslines and a rolling DVD called The Direct Effect, and a bridging jackknife to pin Green in 2.5 minutes. Grace gets the mic and calls out Jade, says, "Hey, champ," and warns her what is coming her way. And if you're done babysitting that title, you can step up to me. So Grace then sidesteps as Chelsea runs Jade off the edge of the apron, and Grace holds up Jade's belt and continues the move towards a women's title match between these two.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this rounds out Saturday night's main event, this match.
It could. I mean, the reactions to this Jordan Grace Chelsea Green match were pretty low here, and I think Grace has certainly cooled down since her time in NXT. To me, like, she was the hottest after her first Rumble appearance. Coming out at NXT, especially as part of this like class of like, what, I don't know, four other like the NXT people coming in, she certainly doesn't feel as special. But of course they could build her. But all that said, it still feels really early for her to actually go after Jade's championship, even though like the pairing kind of makes sense. Two powerhouse women. But people don't really know Jordan Grace yet, at least like not to a level where they would feel something for any of this. So I think they still have a lot of work to do there.
Kathy Kelly interviews Trick. He's putting SmackDown on notice. He says that Priest and Orton have a match with the future, and he's going to whoop that ass. And Priest walks in, says, Trick likes to talk. I don't. And he challenges Trick to a match next Friday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One man that likes to talk and one that doesn't. Can't wait. So in addition to that match, we're going to get the Wyatt Six against the MFTs for the tag belts next week. Nothing regarding the lantern up for grabs. And Julia and Kiana against Charlotte and Alexa against Nia Jax and Lash Legend in another three-way women's match.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I also, at least like on the version that I was watching on Netflix, they're doing straight up like Saudi Arabia tours of man's now as part of this Riyadh season build up to Royal Rumble.
I'm skipping through a lot of those. So yeah, those are in there. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've all kind of gradually expected this, but it's kind of gotten to the point now where like, if they aired this, you know, like certainly after the Hoshoji murder, like there'd be a lot more outcry. Now it just kind of feels like it's an accepted part of the show.
It's directly promoting people to go visit Saudi Arabia. Like I thought these were just like Royal Rumble ads. That's why I've kind of skimmed through them. But
yes, it's that. But it's also like advertising the city and like literally it's got big words in bold text, the city. And the NURL is like visit Saudi Arabia or something.
Like this is the next step. It's like it's normalizing Saudi Arabia. Now it's Rumble and it'll be even more so next year. We want you to travel to Saudi Arabia. Like that is the evolution of this deal. That's going to be like this has always been the desired goal. Ilya Dragunov and Sami Zayn closes the show. This is the rematch from when Ilya returned from injury, beating Sami for the U.S. title. They had a very good match here, trading German suplexes. As always, Ilya somehow finds a way to bleed here. He took some errant headbutt, so he got busted up over his eye. Zayn hits a sunset bomb and then is caught with the Constantine special. H-bomb is stopped with an upkick, and then with clotheslines in the corner, Zayn runs at him with the haluva, and Ilya gets out of the way, hits a torpedo Moscow on the edge of the apron, and Zayn had to beat the count into the ring, and boy, was Daphne LeSean just holding on that 10 for Sami to get in at the last possible moment to beat the count. And Ilya comes off the top for a senton, which misses, and Zayn hits the exploder and the haluva, winning clean in 12 minutes and 27 seconds. So Zayn joins the four-way, and Trick jumps Zayn at the end, hits him with the trick shot to end the show. So big focus on Trick Williams, who feels as though they are certainly going to protect in this four-way next week with Sami Zayn, Trick Williams, Damian Priest, and Randy Orton for Montreal.
You got, well, first of all, I thought the match had a great-looking finish. Crowd responded well to it. But I actually felt for the rest of the match, I thought the heat to be quite lacking, especially for like a London crowd. Don't know if you agree, John. Like the action was strong, but I just didn't think the crowd was responding the way that I would expect.
It certainly didn't get to the level of some of Ilya's big matches. I didn't think it was like a wild crowd reaction, but I didn't think it was subdued either. No, anyway, I liked the match. I didn't have too many complaints of it. It was, you know, a good TV main event, but not the upper echelon Ilya matches we've been getting of late over the last couple of months.
Do you have a prediction for that four way?
Sami.
Yeah. I feel like of these contenders and candidates, just considering the setting in Saudi Arabia, you know, like Drew Orton is something that they were teasing us with. It's always possible. Drew and Priest, I'd see absolutely nothing, no interest in that. Trick feels too early, but Sami versus Drew in Saudi, just given maybe a bigger build towards their history, feels like it's the obvious choice.
I think it's the clear-cut choice to do. In Montreal, that's a great kind of, yep, that's the kind of match you want for a Rumble. And for this year, I think it's like you will have people that will be believing that Sami could win that match. Like with this story of him losing 145 times to Drew McIntyre, will this be the one as well? So, I mean, we got a little bit more toward the Rumble, but we are 2 weeks away from this show, and we know Drew's going to defend the title. Cody's in the Rumble. And they have not said a peep about the Women's Rumble. Nothing. Like, that's all we have to go for this Royal Rumble. So they've got four shows to build up that show, and we got Saturday night's main event as well.
Yeah. So, and again, do you have a prediction for how many matches at the Rumble this year?
I'm guessing four, maybe five, but yeah. I could see four as well, because your title matches are going to get time as well. Like, you figure Punk is going to defend, and like if it's Sami and Drew and anyone, like I'm thinking that's going to be 20 or so, and you're getting easily like those Rumble matches, like of allotment, like it turns into closer to 90 minutes per match with everything involved with those matches, and that's a pretty full show.
You got it
right there.
Got to get your commercials and tourism ads in there as well.
Well, there's those. There's going to be a lot of that. Like I could see a lot of that for Mania the next year too. Like this is going to be quite the promotional exercise that you're going to get at the Rumble in 2 weeks. I will say this. I've been very critical of these 3 hour SmackDowns, but I would say after three of these episodes, I think they have structured these fairly well. I thought this was overall like a pretty,
hold on a second. What?
Excuse me? These have not been
I'm just amazed that you're saying something positive about these three-hour SmackDowns.
It's not my preferred length. I think you could get all of this done in 2 hours, but I think that these have come across a lot better after 3 weeks. I've given it 3 weeks, and maybe the afternoon to spread it out does help. I do have a lot more hours to watch this before we have to record. That helps a bit. So anyway, there you go.
When you can skip the commercials, you don't feel the drag nearly as much. So
yeah,
total content time, what are we talking about? Like 2.5 hours, of that being like entrances and video packages.
Yeah, exactly.
Through.
Like you can get a 3 hour SmackDown watched in probably 90 to an hour 40.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
roughly. Mm-hmm. You know, if you were watching Impact last night just for the wrestling first of all, that crowd.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, can you remember a time a wrestling crowd went to a show to see three matches? Three matches.
Yeah, even a WWE card. I mean, how many three match? Okay, Dynamite, Blood and Guts.
Okay,
my show of the
yes,
year.
You're right. Did they do any tapings attached to that? That's what I was trying to think.
But the crowd was there for three matches.
You're right. You're right. They were three matches.
The Impact was not that sort of show.
It was fun because today I went through, like, I was curious, like, how much ad time was in there, and it was like. Uh-huh. It was like 35 minutes of commercial time on the Sportsnet 360 version. And that includes those stingers, the warnings when you come back from break. Yeah. But these commercial lengths, the shortest commercial was 3 minutes and 50 seconds. The longest one right before the main event, 4 minutes and 45 seconds of ads. before they came back, and then they went to a 4.5 minute commercial break during the main event. Like, that's like 9 minutes of commercials in your last like 23 minutes of the show.
That's way too much. And I really wonder if this is something you can fix in week two. Like, you can't necessarily change our roster drastically, but you can change the amount of commercials times. And I really feel like this is something that AMC, if they see this sort of reaction for, if they see this talking point often enough, that they might actually choose to budge on, or they might at least like change the structure of the show to spread it out. Even, you know, if they have to, you know, have so many commercial breaks, more than just a 4 minute something commercial break, that's a little too long.
Any other closing thoughts on SmackDown for you?
Not really. I feel like overall, like some of the, you know, undercard stuff has been a bit better. I think there's been improvement in MFTs versus, what is it, the Wyatts. Charlotte and Alexa teasing a bit of tension, I think, might, you know, be a bit interesting. But overall, you know, I think a better SmackDown than usual, actually, because they've often been not very good. So I would say better than usual.
And next week's show, I mean, it will be back at the normal time, but they will be in Montreal, presumably some hot crowds you would hope for in Montreal. Next
with
week.
A big Sami, well, with Sami Zayn appearing.
Zayn should have like a big promo segment, something of substance on the SmackDown show. So that's coming up next week. So that's going to wrap up our SmackDown portion of the show. We want to thank all of you here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. The fun doesn't stop this weekend, because on Saturday night, we will have several shows for you. On Collision Course, Kate from Montreal will be joined by Bruce Lord. They will be going through the Maximum Carnage edition of Collision, taped in Phoenix. And then late Saturday night, I will be live with Jack Wannon right after the Genesis pay-per-view. That will be for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. If you jump on board, and we do appreciate all the new signups over the past 24 hours, you can go check our Impact review from Thursday night. Quite the dissection of the launch on AMC. This is going to be my favorite era of all the new eras of TNA, I think. AMC.
Perhaps, yeah. A lot of people were very interested in hearing our thoughts, and we had also some really colorful feedback at the end of this show from our listeners, so I would recommend it just for those things alone. Yeah.
So you can check out all of that. And then Sunday night here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel, it is the NWA podcast, because everyone was asking one question on Thursday night. TN8.
Yeah.
I will trust that Nate Milton found 2 hours to watch this AMC debut, and I will be all ears for his thoughts on Sunday night with the whole NWA crew on Sunday night. So look out for that. Another big week coming up on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We'll get into that on Monday, but we will be starting our reviews of WWE Unreal next week, plus a special retrospective on some of the best matches involving Kazuchika Okada and Hiroshi Tanahashi. All of that will be coming your way next week, and you can catch up on our Best and Worst Of show that came out earlier this week. It's now free for everyone, and you can hear all of our takes, the good and the bad of 2025, alongside the Poison Rana team of Braden Harrington and Davey Portman. So a lot of great stuff coming out over the past week. I was very happy with all the output.
You have 2 more weeks to jump in at our $6 a month rate in the Post Wrestling Cafe, where you can access all the things John mentioned, plus our Wrestle Kingdom review. If you sign up right now, you get to keep your $6 a month rate for the rest of 2026. So yes, come January, we are going to be increasing our rate from $6 to $8. Sign up right now and you get to keep $6 as your rate for the rest of the year.
Outsmart us. That's what we're asking you to do before the end of the month. So you have about 2 more weeks to capitalize. Thank you to everyone here on the YouTube channel, and we're going to say goodbye to you. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.